Updates tuned to yesterday, showcasing programs from radio's golden age. Welcome, I'm your host Mark Livonier, and this hour, science fiction, later on Dimension X from 1951, but first a broadcast of X-1 called The Haunted Corpse. This NBC episode first heard on December 5th, 1957.
Countdown for blastoff. X-5, 4, 3, 2, X-1, fire. From the far horizons of the unknown come tales of new dimensions in time and space. These are stories of the future. Adventures in which you'll live in a million could-be years on a thousand maybe worlds. The National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine, presents
X-1.
Minus One, and the story of The Haunted Corpse.
We moved in at 0800. That's pretty good time, considering that Van Pelt turned up at the Pentagon on Thursday, and it took him till Monday morning to go in and see the general. By Tuesday, I had a task force of 135 men bivouacked around the old man's place. Corporal McCabe, my orderly, reported mission accomplished.
Well, Colonel, there's a whole company dug in down the road right yonder, and Wings is all set up right here like you done ordered. We got a covey of them recon cars from the cavalry roaming like a passel of June bugs quartering a handkerchief.
McCabe isn't very bright, but he's loyal. Well, about 9 in the morning, the old man woke up. I suppose the firing at the auxiliary pistol range I set up got him out of bed.
Get out of here. Go on, you. Get those trucks off my lawn. Get out!
Dr. Horn.
What is this, the Boy Scout Jamboree? Are you the Scoutmaster?
Dr. Horn, I am Lieutenant Colonel Windermere, sir. My orders are to establish a security cordon about your laboratory.
What?
Here you are, sir, my copy of your orders.
What the devil is this nonsense?
You will see they are signed by General Follansbee himself.
I know. That sniveling rat Van Pelt. He went to the army, is that it? That mountainous, ungrateful tub of rancid lard went crawling into Washington and ratted to some tin soldier.
Sir, General Follansbee is not a tin soldier.
Is that it? Did Dick Van Pelt come to you with some cock and bull story? The chicken-livered, worm-eaten, misbegotten offspring
Dr.
of a...
Dr. Horn, the general asked me to give you his personal assurance that we will not interfere in your work here. But I'm sure you understand the importance of security.
Now, you listen to me. The Horn Effect is my personal property, not the government's or the army's. What is this, creeping socialism?
Sir, security. My orderly isn't cleared.
Oh, that don't make no never mind, Colonel. I don't rightly grasp what he's saying nohow.
McCabe, report to my tent.
Oh, just when it's getting interesting.
Now, Dr. Horn, I want you to know that I'm here to help you. If there's anything you want, just ask me. If you want to go into town, that can be arranged. Of course, you'd better give us 24-hour notice so we can clear the streets and check
out
all...
Young man?
Yes, sir.
You may go to the devil.
Of course, he went in to call the Pentagon and protest. He had a lot of spirit for an old civilian of about 75.
Hello? Hello? This is Dr. Eric Horn. I want to protest an invasion of my privacy.
Of course, Dr. Horn, I understand.
There's an officious young Cub Scout out at my place making a pest of himself. A lieutenant something.
Lieutenant Colonel Windermere.
But I called Washington.
Yes, sir, but our intercept monitor put the call through to me. We'll take care of any outside calls you wish to make.
Of all the insufferable...
Oh. At about 0600 the next morning, I ran a surprise full-scale inspection and simulated infiltration.
Hey, look there! You trigger-happy idiots! It's me, McCabe! And you simulated! You hear?
Fortunately, he was only grazed. The wire stringing detail worked all night, and we had surrounded the old Victorian house with triple-strand electrified barbed wire with guard towers every 50 feet. At 1400, I paid a call on Dr. Horn.
What are you doing here?
Good afternoon, Dr. Horn. I came in for your report.
My what?
Your daily progress report. It's in my orders. Paragraph 8. Just carry on, sir. Corporal McCabe will take your words down. Oh, his clearance came through last night. You have a method for electronically killing a man without touching him.
Killing, Lieutenant? Will you tell me what in the sweet name of heaven did I say that gave you that particularly stupid notion? But I understand. You think this is a weapon.
Of course, sir.
Of course. My machine renders humans into corpses. A chipped flint will also do that. Look, you simpleton, don't you realize what my machine can do? It can separate that something which, added to a body, produces a man. A subtracted leaves a corpse. I can separate the two things without destroying them. You understand that I can take the ghost of life out of a body and keep it unharmed. Try to understand that, you pig-headed, mule-eared, rabbit-faced...
You're listening to The Haunted Corpse on X-1.
What can you do with 2 cents? Not much? Don't you believe it. Because for 2 cents a year, you as an American taxpayer are helping to better the health of the world. You are doing this good work through the World Health Organization, a specialized agency of the United Nations. The organization's objective is the attainment by all peoples of the highest possible level of health. Through its education, training, and technical assistance, people throughout the world are slowly learning what causes diseases and how to overcome them. You are a part of the great work being done by this United Nations agency, and it costs you only 2 cents a year.
Now, back to X-1 and The Haunted Corpse.
I terminated the interview and went back to headquarters to prepare my situation analysis. Van Pelt, all 300 pounds of him, was waiting for me. He was eating a can of sea ration with a knife.
He's perfectly sane, Colonel, but he's dangerous. Very dangerous. You've got to protect me, absolutely.
Van Pelt, I want the straight dope on Horn. Now, what is this ghost business?
Oh, that. That's just his way of putting it. You see, care to join me in a can of beans?
No, thank you.
Well, there's a difference between a living man and a dead man, and that difference is what Dr. Horn whimsically calls a ghost. Call it life plus intelligence plus soul, if there is such a word in your lexicon, Colonel.
You mean his machine conjures up ghosts?
No, Colonel, Dr. Horn is an impossible old vulture, but he's not a faker. Horn can drain the essence of life from a body and store it, or if he wishes, he can replace them in another body. Would you mind handing me the can opener? This looks interesting. Macaroni and beef. Supper ration.
Well, so he had a machine that could take a mind out of one body and put it in another body. Well, why didn't he say so straightforwardly instead of beating around the bush like a civilian? Of course, he was a civilian, which might explain it. Next morning, I went to the laboratory with Corporal McCabe and insisted on a demonstration.
All right, this way, gentlemen.
Please, Corporal McCabe is an enlisted man.
At this pole, we have a Cocker Spaniel. And over here, a Rhode Island Red.
That's a right perky-looking chicken, Doc.
If you will kindly stay clear of the terminal areas, I will activate the field.
What's happening?
Field is vibrating at the cycloid rate set on the crystals. All right, it's ready for discharge. Now.
Well,
watch. Here, Rover. Here, boy. Here, boy.
Hey, that ain't no hand. That's the chicken.
I know. Here, Rover.
Well, I'll be pickled for an eel. That little old chicken is trying to wag its tail.
And over here. Here, chick, 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 chicky. Here, chick, 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 chick.
Well, doggone. I never did see the like of that. A flop-eared, honest-to-Pete dog trying to pet corn.
I had a private conference with the old man later. Under Section K of my security regulations, I moved on my own initiative.
Well, Lieutenant?
Lieutenant Colonel, there is a slight difference.
Well?
Now, can you do this with people?
Indeed I can. But the silly laws covering these things, they won't let me. I've tried. Imagine a simple exchange. A man dying of terminal cancer and a feeble-minded youth. Put the sound mind into the sound body and let the decayed parts rot together. But will they let me? No, no!
You've never tried the machine on people?
No. But you're here, a military man, hmm? Very brave. All I need is a volunteer. That coward Van Pelt refused. That's why he sneaked off to you. But a brave soldier like you...
Negative, sir. Negative.
But, Lieutenant...
Negative, sir. Besides, I am not a lieutenant. I'm a field-grade officer. I don't believe you appreciate the investment the service has made in my training. However, if you need volunteers, the Army has a way of obtaining volunteers, sir. We'll see what we can do. Actually, it was easy. First, there was a boy from Maine awaiting court-martial on an AWOL charge. Second, he volunteered when I pointed out he could get up to a year at hard labor. And then McCabe.
Oh, no, Colonel, sir. I ain't a volunteering type.
Well, McCabe, I have been asked to recommend a non-com for infantry assignment in the Aleutian Islands.
Infantry?
Yes. Advance Rifle Platoon Scout.
The Aleutians?
In the winter.
Colonel, sir, I beg to report you have found a volunteer, namely I.
Dr. Horn had arranged the terminus of the machine poles to be tapped into metal helmets which were adjusted on the heads of the two men.
This here reminds me of playing left tackle.
Ready, Lieutenant?
Ready.
But, Colonel, sir, maybe I better not try this. Well, I mean, I cancel my GI insurance.
The Aleutians?
Yes, sir, Colonel, sir. Well, goodbye.
The test was an anticlimax. It worked. McCabe, that is, McCabe's body, reported himself as Private Ethan Coffin in a broad Down East dialect. I had Horn switch them back, and then I went back to my tent and put through a call. Crash priority.
General Fallins be on a scrambler circuit, Colonel, sir.
All right. Now leave, McCabe. This is top secret.
They don't never tell me nothing. I swear it's worse than grade school.
Now, General...
Colonel!
Van Pelt, what's the idea of barging in? I'm making a top secret
call. You didn't let Horn make his test, you didn't.
Now out, Van Pelt, out.
But that's all he's been waiting for. You gotta listen
McCabe,
to me.
McCabe!
Colonel!
Escort Mr. Van Pelt out. I was floating on a cloud of pure joy. I could see my eagles within my grasp. Maybe even a full star. I told the general my plan. Are you still there, sir? Oh, well. You see, we use the device for intelligence. Suppose someone way up top in their government should visit the United States. We switch him. Put our own man in his body, you see? Or in wartime, take a few prisoners and put our men inside their bodies. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I can be available for a staff meeting at 0900. Yes, sir.
General Windermere. Lieutenant General Windermere. Oh, why not? General of the armies.
Colonel, sir.
Oh. What is it, McCabe?
That Mr. Van Pelt.
Listen, McCabe. Next time I'm on the top secret scrambler to the Pentagon, don't you dare let anybody into the command tent.
No, sir, Colonel, sir. But this here Van Pelt.
I don't want to hear about him. Now let him cool his heels a while.
Well, he ain't. That is, he left.
Good.
But he carried on something frightful. He kept saying Mr. Horn wanted to live forever.
What?
Screw, he ain't it. That's what he said. He said all Horn was waiting on was to make a test on human beings. He said that he's going to grab the first man he runs into and steal his body. I think he is drunk or something.
McCabe, call a condition red alert.
What for?
Don't argue. Oh, never mind. You go up to the laboratory and take Dr. Horn into custody. I'll give the alert. Now move. I could see it all immediately. I grabbed my sidearm and buckled it on. And I threw the switch that signaled a red alert throughout the unit. Just what you'd expect from a selfish civilian like Horn. He'd take an invention like this and use it to steal other people's bodies to prolong his own nearly senile existence in a younger body. And if that happened, there goes my general star. Because he'd surely smash the machine and we'd never be able to trace him or switch him back, and we wouldn't know which body he stole. I was held up at the inner perimeter for 5 precious minutes while some idiot insisted on a password. I just happened to forget it, although I had issued it in the morning. Luckily, while I was swearing at him, I accidentally hit the right combination and let me through. Van Pelt had gone into the laboratory, I knew that. Probably to try to stop the old man, but the effect would be to supply him with a body. He'd have to swap immediately. He couldn't take the chance of a heart attack. I ran into the laboratory, my sidearm drawn. Horn! Dr. Horn! I tripped over a human body. Still warm. Dr. Horn. His cast-off cocoon. Abandoned. And then in front of me, I saw him. Van Pelt!
Too late! Too late!
Now wait, listen. Oh, McCabe, what happened to you? He slugged you, did he?
Too late!
Now wait, don't smash the machine. Van Pelt, I know it's really you, Dr. Horn, in Van Pelt's body. Now put down that gun.
I'll smash it! Smash it!
Stop! Don't wreck the machine! Listen, Dr. Horn, I'll help you. I'll see you get a good, healthy body as long as you want it. Dr. Horn, think of the safety of our country. Think of security.
No, I'm not Dr.
Who shot that? McCabe, put that pistol away, you fool! Oh, Horn. Dr. Horn, speak to me. Now, I know it's you in Van Pelt's body. Now, speak to me, Dr. Horn. He's dead. McCabe, you simple-minded... Why did you kill him? Oh, everything is gone. My general star, everything. All right, McCabe, report to your quarters. You'll get a court-martial that'll make your hair curl.
I sat there in the wrecked laboratory and I almost cried. Everything gone, the machine, the brilliant mind that knew its secret. I looked at the corpse of Van Pelt that held the mind of Dr. Horn before that idiot McCabe had put a bullet through the brain and killed both. I could almost feel cheerful as I thought of the court-martial to come. It was at that moment that Sergeant O'Hare came in to tell me that McCabe wanted me on the telephone. I picked it up and waited to hear the miserable rat crawl and plead for mercy.
Colonel, sir, this here's Corporal McCabe.
McCabe, there is no use pleading for mercy. I trust you have managed to find your quarters. You're under arrest.
That's what I thought. I don't think I'll stay for the court-martial, Lieutenant. They bore me.
McCabe, but the voice. Dr. Horn.
Precisely, Lieutenant, precisely. Goodbye now. If a body meet a body coming through the... Goodbye, Lieutenant. Thanks for the body.
You have just heard X-1, presented by the National Broadcasting Company in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine. X-1 has brought you The Haunted Corpse, a story from the pages of Galaxy written by Frederick Pohl and adapted for radio by Ernest Kenoy. Featured in our cast were Leon Janney, Jim Bowles, Joseph Bell, and Reese Taylor. This is Fred Collins. X-1 was directed by Daniel Sutter and is an NBC Radio Network production.
X-1, untuned to yesterday, an NBC episode from July 25th, 1957, featuring the Frederick Pohl story, The Haunted Corpse, which would be used again about 5 months later, in December of 1957. You're listening to an hour of science fiction, untuned to yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Now, the forerunner to X-1 on the National Broadcasting Company was, in fact, Dimension X, and many stories from the series were repurposed for X-1, with new actors at times, but the same scripts. This episode next, called The Vital Factor, was heard on X-1 about 4 years after this initial airing, from August 16, 1951.
Adventures in time and space, told in future tense.
Dimension X.
The National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with Street and Smith, publishers of astounding science fiction, bring you Dimension X. I doubt that anywhere on Earth there's a man or a woman or a child who doesn't know the name Wayne Crowder. I doubt whether there's a human being who hasn't at one time or another used one of the Crowder products, the can opener or the razor blade, or the patented tooth powder dispenser, or the Crowder improved slideless fastener. There's a fortune in such products, and Wayne Crowder was the man to squeeze that fortune out, penny by penny. And he did. And in the magazines which write about men of business, he was described as a man of ice and stone and ink and steel. No warmth and a heart to pump blood, not feel human emotion. But he took some of his money and he built himself a towering skyscraper. And he placed his private office at the very peak. And he built a battery of buttons into his desk so that when he wanted something, all he ever had to do was press a button. And like genies springing out of the bottle, the proper personnel would come running.
Yes, Mr. Crowder.
Got me my engineer.
Yes, sir. Right away, Mr. Crowder. Mr. Crowder wants his engineers at once. Here are your engineers, sir.
All right, close the door and get out. Now, gentlemen... Sit down. Gentlemen, I hired you because you're the best engineers I was able to find. They tell me you can do anything. They tell me if there's a scientific fact known in the world, even if it was discovered 6 hours ago, you gentlemen are up on it. All right, I want to put that to work. Gentlemen, I want you to build me a spaceship.
What? A spaceship, sir?
That's right. I've decided that I'm going to be the man who gives space flight to mankind. Any questions?
Well, I don't know. Sir, we can design such a ship. That part's not too hard. The basic blueprint has been in existence for many years. The submarine is the model for the shape and the form, but...
Yes?
But we have no way of providing the motor to power such a ship.
When the ship's ready to fly, there'll be a motor.
Sir, I don't like to contradict you, but you see, scientists have been searching for a motor power for spaceships for decades now without success. You'll have a ship, but we can't lift that ship from the Earth's surface. That is, not to the point of free flight at any rate.
Mr. Crowder, you see, you'll be spending millions of dollars, hundreds of millions perhaps, for nothing.
What's your name?
Phillips, sir.
You're fired. What? Go down to the cashier and draw your pay and get out.
But, Mr. Crowder...
Get out. Nobody who works for me thinks of how much something costs. We use money. We don't let expense provide a rationalization for not beginning a project. Phillips, what are you waiting for? Get out. Gentlemen, any other comments?
The ship will be built, of course, Mr. Crowder. But the fact still remains, we can't power it.
You design the ship. I'll find the motor for you.
Where, sir?
That's a fair question. The answer is, I don't know. But somewhere in the world, there's a man who does know the secret. Long before Henry Ford, there was Leonardo da Vinci. And long before him, there was Archimedes. And long before him, there was some Stone Age genius who invented the wheel when the only thing the mob could conceive was dragging things around on their backs. I want that motor. And I'll root out the man who has the theory which will let us build it. I'll find him. Money will be available to him, an organization, my backing, and we'll get what we want.
You're going to be plagued with a host of crackpots, sir.
Obviously. So it's going to be your job to separate the wheat from the chaff. But anyone who shows up with a promising idea, no matter how fantastic it sounds, is going to have a chance to show what it can do.
How quickly do you want this done, sir?
Yesterday.
Yes, sir.
Anything you need.
Well, Mr. Crowder, we'll need construction yards, sir, and certain machinery and a great many materials, of course. A labor force.
Get them. Send me the bills. I don't want to be bothered with minor details.
Yes, sir. One more thing, sir. Phillips, sir.
Yes?
We need him, sir. He's a top man on electronics. He's a vital cog in our team.
I don't want Phillips working for me. That's clear, I hope. Who else in the country knows what he does?
Not one in this country, sir. There's a man in Asia, though.
Get him.
We've tried before, Mr. Crowder. He's working on an important project for his country.
I'm not concerned with details. Now get that man. Pay him what he wants, but get him. But,
sir, you don't understand.
I understand, man.
If this man quits his job, that whole project will collapse. It means the welfare of many people, millions of people in his country. And he has a high sense of patriotism.
Buy that sense of patriotism. Now, that's all. I don't want to see you again until you have a report of work in progress.
Yes, sir.
Yes, Mr. Crowder.
As a man named Phillips going to draw his pay, I want two company policemen to meet him at the cashier's office and escort him from there directly off the premises, and I want them to be emphatic about it.
Yes, Mr. Crowder.
And notify the newspapers, the television, and the radio networks, periodicals, and the scientific journals that I'll receive the press in my office this afternoon at 3:30. I have an important announcement to make. You can finish your drinks later. Gentlemen of the press and ladies, it's my pleasure to be able to tell you that I'm in the process of constructing a spaceship. What? Any questions?
Did you say a spaceship?
That's right.
That's what I thought you said. I knew the drinks weren't that strong.
Well, yeah. I expected it might be something of a shock to you all.
Mr. Crowder, is this spaceship under construction now?
It is.
Well, according to your plans, is it intended for interstellar flight or merely for flight between planets?
This is a beginning only, and my intentions are quite modest. I expect the ship to be able to pursue a course between Earth and Mars or between Earth and Venus. For the present, any longer trips are not contemplated.
You've solved the problem of motive force, then?
No, I haven't.
But what sort of... You mean you don't have any means of propulsion for the spaceship?
That problem is not solved as yet. It will be! That's why I called you in this afternoon. I want you to announce that I have $100,000 in cash waiting for the man or woman who first brings me the basic idea for such a motor. That's all I have to say for now. We'll finish our refreshments, ladies and gentlemen. I'll let you know from time to time how things go.
Mr. Crowder, one more question, please.
Yes.
Do you have a name for this spaceship yet?
No, not yet.
Then let me suggest one.
Yeah?
Crowder's Folly.
Quiet, all of you. Quiet! What is your paper?
The Daily Times, sir.
Inform the company police that under no circumstances is any representative of the Daily Times ever to be allowed on company property again.
Crowder is offering $100,000 to any inventor who can produce an engine capable of driving a spaceship.
Wayne Crowder is offering $100,000 to any inventor who can produce
an engine capable of driving a spaceship. It was Crowder's folly, but the word of what he wanted circulated to the far corners of the globe. And it was known in the white ice block huts of the Eskimos and in the grass-thatched villages of Central Africa, as well as places less remote. And the Crowder office became the Mecca and the heaven for the lunatic fringe of humanity. Their blueprints and scale models clogged its corridors, and more applicants came to the great skyscraper.
I told you, don't want these people in my office till they're screened. Now get out! Every time I open that door, they surge in like a tidal wave.
I have a progress report for you, sir, on the construction of the ship.
Go ahead.
I've spent $13 million for the yards, the equipment, including three gantry cranes, several dozen presses, thousands of dies, and so forth.
Go on, go on.
We have 12,000 people working for us directly, not including subcontractors and their labor force.
But what about the ship?
Mr. Crowder, the ship is finished as far as we can go. Certain additional construction cannot be done now because it depends on the shape and the mass of the engine, on the type of fuel, on the weight of that fuel.
I see. All right, lay off everybody we don't need.
I've ordered that, sir. Mr. Crowder, is it possible that no one will turn up with a motor?
That's the one thing that's not possible. He will come. Money and determination will buy anything. Now, close the door on your way out.
Yes.
Order the proper department to put a name on the forward end of the ship. I want letters in pure gold, 1 foot high. The name of the ship is Crowder's Folly. Get it done today.
The sun rose in the morning and glinted rose on the silver sheen of the hollow ship's skin. The sun set at night and glinted rose on the silver sheen of the hollow ship's skin. The golden letters on the prow held out the fury of Crowder for the world to see. A staff of 50 was employed, as time went on, in taking rust preventive measures to ensure the ship's well-being. In a year, the first experiment seemed ready to bear fruit, and a test was held. The atomic fission motor.
In exactly 45 seconds now, we'll hold the test, Mr. Crowder. The actual trial of the motor is taking place 3 miles from here. Now, this dial here registers the nucleonic activity. And this dial right here is thrust. Over here, this dial is a measure of the effectiveness of the shielding in terms of outside radioactivity. That sound you hear is our generators right here, building up power to supply the motor by remote control. Now, if this needle goes around to the part of the dial marked in red, there will be an explosion. Are there any questions, sir?
Proceed with the tests.
Watch the needle, sir. 8,000. 8,500. 9,000. 10. 11. 12. 15. That's an overload now, sir. 18. 20. I don't know how much more it can stand, sir.
What happened? Your generator blew out. What kind of...
I beg your pardon, sir. The motor blew up.
What are you talking about? I'd hear, sir.
You see, sir, it takes a while for the vibrations of an explosion to travel 3 miles and then reach through 15 feet of concrete.
I see. Well, there are other experiments in progress. Let me know when they're ready for testing.
Yes, sir. Mr. Crowder, the inventor of that motor had to be with it, of course, during the tests, but he has, that is, he had a family.
The fool knew what he was doing. He understood the danger. Now line up those experiments and don't turn anyone away if he seems to have the remotest possibility of success. Now, I'm telling you, my man will come. Money and determination will buy anything.
And strangely enough, Crowder was right. Because one day there came to his office a stranger. A small man. He looked even smaller in that tremendous room. He was an unusual visitor in that he carried no briefcase fat with blueprints, schematics, or formulae. He was unusual in that he neither blustered, cowered, nor deferred to his host. Oh, he was a pleasant little stranger, bird-like of eye and movement, bright and smiling.
Mr. Crowder, my name is Wilkins. I can power that ship you want.
So?
Of course, what I have in mind won't be anything like that meaningless... for you.
What?
Well, Rocket, my motor requires a difference here in my head.
It so happens that I'm presently... supporting half a dozen people who make the... None of them have been successful. What makes you think your idea will work?
Simple enough. The common magnet. What? Electromagnetism. Utilization of the force of gravity, or its opposite in this case, counter-gravity.
Thank you very much. If you'll forgive me now,
just a moment, Mr. Crowder. There's one thing more. This.
I've seen pieces of metal before, thank you.
How high from your desk would you say I'm holding it?
I'm very sorry, Mr. Wilkins. Do you want to leave, or do you want to be escorted out?
This will only take a second, sir. How high from your desk would you say I'm holding this piece of metal?
Foot and a half.
And if I let go, then in less than a second, a fraction of a second, it should fall to your desk.
Now, look, I don't want the surface of that desk marred.
But will it be? You see, I have let go of the metal, is that right?
What? Good Lord.
Many seconds ago, it should have crashed to the desk, am I right?
This is incredible.
Well, if you want to speak to me anymore, I'll be right outside.
But it hasn't fallen.
That's right, sir. It hasn't fallen.
It floats in the air.
That's right, sir. It floats in the air.
How do you do it?
Well, why don't you call your engineers and ask them? I'll wait outside.
Get me my engineers immediately. Mr. Wilkins, you're quite right. This piece of metal is apparently counter-gravity. My engineers can give me no explanation.
Thank you, sir.
What do you want?
I want to build a spaceship using this material. No great expenditure, a hundredth of the cost your behemoth sitting out there in your building yard, and three other things. Workshop, expert mechanical assistance, and an answer to one question.
What is the question?
Why do you want so much to build this ship?
Frankly, because I love power. Because I'm ambitious. I want to be the master, not only of one world, but of worlds.
But that's an honest answer. And that's as far as your thinking goes.
What else is there?
But there's my answer. I want to leave this planet and go to Mars. Because there are strange wonders there. Because there will be scarlet sunsets over barren wastes. And in the star-strewn night, the thin, cold air of a dying world stirring in restless sighs across the valleys of the dry canals. You may laugh out loud if you wish, Mr. Crowder. I prefer that to the peculiar, repressed smile you're exhibiting now.
You're a very lucky man, Mr. Wilkins, to have scientific talent, because your talent as a poet are inferior and very sentimental. Well, all right, you're a sentimentalist and I'm man of logic. No matter, we can work together, you and I. Your workshop will be ready by morning. If you need money or materials or personnel, just tell my engineers. And you'll get it, or I'll know the reason why, and that's all.
Thank you, sir.
Get me my engineers.
Yes, Mr. Crowder.
Now, we have 50 men working on preserving that useless hulk out there in the construction yards. Lay them off. Now, how many others?
But the ship will deteriorate if we do that, sir.
Let it rot. Lay them off.
Yes.
Now, how many other employees are still working for us on the project?
About 3,000, sir, including the people working on experimental motors.
Get rid of them.
But, sir...
Get rid of them.
Well, Mr. Crowder, I never thought you'd drop this project. You were so adamant on it.
I'm not dropping anything but dead wood. You saw what Wilkins had to offer. He's my man, and the rest is junk.
Mr. Crowder, he might fail. We ought to have a minimum of protection against...
I say he won't fail.
Yes.
You just lay everybody off that isn't needed. Give him 2 weeks' pay and my thanks for a thankless job well done. That's all.
Yes, sir. I'll get it done, sir. What a year's work.
Yes. And 10 years or 20 years, and I do the same thing. That's why you're an engineer and I'm an executive. That's why you work for me, because when I have to, I can be ruthless with my own mistakes. What are you waiting for?
I was just thinking, Mr. Crowder, what would happen to me if my usefulness to you were over? I've worked for you for 30 years now.
Just don't give me any occasion to consider your usefulness terminated. That oughtn't be too hard.
Yes.
What?
Nothing, sir. I'll make the arrangements at once.
Who are you? What do you want?
I tried to stop him, sir.
Well, speak up, man.
My name is Jar Vizashtuli. I am an electronics expert.
Oh, yes, I remember. You're the Asian. Well, come in, come in.
Do you want me, sir?
Never mind. Just stay outside. Close the door behind you.
Yes, sir.
sit down, Vizushtuli.
Thank you, no. I want to give you a gift before I leave.
Oh, you leaving? I thought we still needed you.
I resigned.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that. I'm told you're a good man.
I want you to understand what's behind this gift. I was working on a power project in my country which would have meant a tremendous rise in the standard of living for millions of my people. I was unable to resist the money you offered.
Had you resisted, even more money would have been forthcoming. I placed no limit on your worth to me.
I understand. But you see, I did not come without a sense of guilt because there was no one in my country who could take my place.
I would assume that.
And now I discovered that what I did was for nothing. The spaceship on which I worked is being dismantled.
That's right.
So I have been corrupted by you at a whim. I think you have too much power, sir. I think you use your power for evil, selfish purposes.
Selfish, yes. Only sentimentality is evil.
I think otherwise. And so, in order that you shall not corrupt anyone else, I have this gift for you. Here you are, sir. And just one more shot for good measure, to make sure you are really dead. Good.
There's a man on his way out by the name of Jar Vizushtuli, an engineer. He's not to be molested. He probably won't stop the cashier, so I want a check for 6 months' salary in advance mailed to his home address. The man showed a certain quality of ruthlessness which is deserving of recognition. And have the chief of the company police bring me a new bulletproof vest. This one seems to have been dented in two places.
Thank you.
within 4 months. It was small. It was shaped like a disc. It gleamed brightly, even in the smoky haze of an October sunset. Inside, Crowder and Mr. Wilkins, in a small cubicle at the heart of the machine, were surrounded by many instruments of a complicated nature. Outside, huge crowds gathered to witness the test. They stirred and murmured, waiting restlessly, as inside the control room of the craft, Wilkins installed the final secret part he had not revealed to those who built his driving apparatus.
Well, Wilkins, what's holding us up?
Nothing now. Or sentiment, perhaps.
What?
A wish to look once more on Earth's familiar scenes. Here, now the screening is removed. Look. Look at the people out there.
Never mind looking out there. Let's leave that thing closed. You're a sentimental fool. Are you afraid? Or did you decide at that last minute that your invention won't work?
It will work. Oh, sit down, Mr. Crowder. Do me a favor. When I press this button, will you please press the button on the arm of the chair you're seated on? I'll tell you when.
Turn on your motor. I want to hear its roar and feel its tug as we cut loose from Earth's gravity and fly outward into space. That might be a moment in which I'd share your sentimentality.
Press your button now, sir. Thank you.
This is all a hoax. I'm beginning to distrust you, Wilkins. When are we going to take off? You said at 5 sharp, and it's 2 minutes after 5 now. Well, do we move or don't we?
Mr. Crowder, we're already moving. The button you pushed was to nullify the effects of acceleration. If you don't mind, I'd like to open the screen again. Now, if you care to look for yourself...
Wilkins, we're in space. Look down at Earth. How far we've come. What? It's no bigger than a toy balloon. A dime. A firefly. Man, Wilkins, you've done it.
Yes.
I swore to be the first man to conquer space, and I've done it. It's a triumph of power and ambition.
And sentiment.
No, blast sentiment. Your maudlin dreaming would have died unborn except for me. I made this possible, Wilkins. Don't ever forget that. My capital, my forcefulness, my will. Look out there. Space. Stars that never were seen from Earth. But this is only the beginning. We'll build a larger model. One great enough to hold 100 men, 1,000, and cargo besides. I'm the master of the planets. Wilkins, turn back now.
No.
What? I said turn back.
No.
But we've proved the ship can fly. Now turn back. I want to start work at once in preparation for the long flights to come.
Not so. We will go on.
What are you doing, defying me? Are you crazy? I'll break your puny little body into pieces.
Mr. Crowder, can you control this ship? Would you like to be stranded out here in space? Just adrift in space without control? Would you like that?
Turn back.
No.
You're crazy.
Crazy? No. Sentimental? Yes. Your money and ambition paved the way, that's true. But sentiment was the vital factor that sent me to you. You'll forgive me if I remove these primitive clothes.
Who are you?
Well, it's all right, Mr. Crowder. There is no need to be so terrified because you've had your first close look at a Martian going home.
You've just heard another adventure into the unknown world of the future, the world of... Detective receives many strange assignments, but none has ever received one quite like that given to the investigator we're going to tell you about next week, as we bring you from the pages of the September issue of Astounding Science Fiction, untitled story. Dimension X is presented each week by the National Broadcasting Company in cooperation with Street and Smith, publishers of the magazine Astounding Science Fiction. Today, Dimension X has presented The Vital Factor, written for radio by Howard Rodman from the story by Nelson Bond. Featured in the cast were Raymond Edward Johnson as Crowder, John McGovern as the engineer, and Louis Van Ruten as the Martian. Your host was Norman Rose. Music by Albert Berman. Dimension X is produced by William Welch and directed by Fred Way.
Dragnet, the story of your police force, is next on NBC.
Dimension X, on Tuned to Yesterday, an NBC broadcast from August 16, 1951. And that does it for this hour of science fiction on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great shows from the golden age of radio. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeVonier. It's been a pleasure.